long?
Nyriss betrayed you. Swear loyalty to me, and I promise you the chance for revenge.
Everything Zedric said made perfect sense, but on some deep primal level, Scourge felt he was being twisted and manipulated. The old human's words seemed to slither into the cracks and crevices of Scourge's mind, burrowing into his thoughts.
No,
his mind screamed in silent protest.
It's a trick!
But was it? Nyriss had convinced him he could kill Darth Zedrix, but a single burst of dark side lightning had nearly killed him instead. The only reason he was still alive was because Darth Zedrix was toying with him.
What if he's not toying with me?
Scourge suddenly wondered.
What if he tried to kill me but failed?
Nyriss had said that Zedrix was old and frail. She'd claimed the Force had ravaged his body. She'd said he'd only held on to his power through reputation and cunning. What if he was relying on those same tools right now? Scourge reached out with the Force again, trying once more to catch a glimpse beneath Zedrix's veil. To his surprise, he sensed something this time. Fear, desperation, and almost no trace of the dark side burning inside his enemy. All the pieces clicked into place. Nyriss was right. Zedrix was a shell of what he had once been. The entire time Scourge had been battling the two apprentices, Zedrix had been gathering his strength for a single surprise attack. When his apprentices fell, he'd stalled for even more time by taunting Scourge, and he still hadn't been able to gather enough power to kill his enemy. The blast of lightning had taken everything the old man had in reserve. In Zedrix, the flame of the dark side had become the faintest flicker. When he saw that Scourge had survived, he realized his only chance of survival was to trick him into switching sides. He'd tried to use the faint echo of the Force to dominate Scourge's mind, augmenting it with persuasive words in a form of temporary hypnosis. But he lacked the strength even for that desperate gambit. The brilliant bluff had almost worked.
Your words are hollow, Zedrix. Just like your power.
Scourge marched forward with grim determination. Zedrix brought his lightsaber up, but Scourge used his own blade to slap it aside with ease. The strength of the blow sent the weapon tumbling from the old man's frail grasp, the blade extinguishing as the hilt clattered onto the stone at their feet. Zedrix staggered backward. He no longer pretended power. He looked desperate and afraid.
Please, Lord Scourge, I'll give you anything you want. Slaves, wealth, power. Power?
Scourge snorted in contempt.
You can't give what isn't yours.
He slashed his blade diagonally across Cedric's chest, slicing him from shoulder to hip. The old man gasped once before falling over backward, his eyes frozen wide in horror, seeming to stare up at the stalactites growing from the cavern ceiling. Knowing that Nyriss would want proof of his death, Scourge reached down and grasped a fistful of the old man's hair with his free hand. Then he slowly drew his lightsaber across the Dark Counselor's throat, the glowing blade cauterizing the wound as he neatly severed the head. He left the rest of the body, along with the corpses of the two apprentices, in the cave, as he trudged back up the passage leading to the surface. As he walked, he couldn't help dwelling on Zedrix's warning about Nyriss. Much of what the old man had said to him had been lies, but the best lies were always built on layers of truth. It was entirely possible that she was using him. At the very least, he could assume she was keeping secrets from him. Confronting her directly would be a waste of time. Fortunately, there were other ways to get information. Despite the possible consequences, Scourge decided it was finally time for his private talk with Setchel. Chapter 11. Revan shivered in the cold. Beside him, Malik said something, but the fierce wind whipping across the plateau devoured his words.
What? Revan shouted. Are you sure it's here?
Malik called back.
It's here, Revan said with a nod. I can feel it. Maybe it's on the other side.
Revan glanced over at the other peak rising up beside them, barely visible through the swirling snow. It was nearly identical to the one they were on. A tall, narrow column of wind-carved ice and snow rising up several kilometers from Rekiad's surface. Its peak worn to a smooth, flat plain of ice.
It's this one! Revan answered confidently. The entrance is around here somewhere!
The two figures moved slowly back and forth across the exposed plateau, searching with the force as much as with their eyes.
Here! Malik shouted. I found it!
Revan woke from the dream with a start, his mind groggy as he tried to get his bearings. It was cool in the thermal tent he and Kandara shared. The insulated lining kept out the worst of the weather, but the nighttime temperatures were still low enough that Revan felt a chill through two layers of clothes and his sleeping bag. As his eyes adjusted to the soft glow of the small heater in the center of the tent, he was able to make out more details of his surroundings. Candorus was still asleep beside him, wrapped tightly in his sleeping bag and snoring loudly. Revan's mind began to reassemble the bits and pieces from the previous night. He'd hoped Candorus would offer more details about his marriage to Vila after she'd stormed out of the supply shack, but he'd stayed silent on the subject. Despite his curiosity, Revan hadn't pressed him. Instead, they'd spent the rest of the night celebrating the big man's return to his people. Edric and the others offered up countless tales of Candorus's youth. His many battles and victories against overwhelming odds were the stuff of legends among Clan Ordo. They'd also offered up plenty of Creaky, a bitter Mandalorian ale. Not wanting to be resented as an outsider, Revan had matched the other revelers drink for drink. The vile beverage packed plenty of kick. He hadn't had a hangover this bad since his wedding night. His head was spinning, his eyes were blurred, and his mouth tasted like he'd been chewing on bantha fur. He'd still be sleeping it off, if not for the dream. No, not a dream. Another memory bubbling to the surface. He and Malik had been searching for something here on Rekiad. Something that was somehow connected to Mandalore's mask. He didn't know what it was, but with a little help, he might be able to use the details of his dream to figure out where they had been looking. He peeled back the sleeping bag and immediately felt goosebumps prickling up on the flesh beneath his long-sleeved shirt. Ignoring the cold, he picked his way through the semi-darkness until he found his personal holocom lying under a pile of clothes in one corner of the tent. Scooting back into the warmth of his sleeping bag, Revan activated the device.
T3, can you read me?
A tiny holographic image of the droid materialized in front of him, beeping with concern.
Everything's fine, Revan assured him in a whisper. Just try to keep it down. Candorus is still asleep.
The astromech's response was an excited whistle, though the volume was slightly lower than before.
See? I knew you'd be able to put the hawk back together without my help.
T3 beeped indignantly.
Yeah, that snow gets everywhere, but it'll melt. Besides, you can worry about that later. I need you to do something for me. Start scanning the topography maps for two massive columns of ice standing close together. 2 or 3 kilometers high, at least. When you find them, send me the coordinates.
There were roughly 30 seconds of silence on the other end before T3 chirped a reply.
Great work, T3. Remember, keep an eye on the ship. I'll call you if we need anything else.
Revan turned off the holocom, knowing the easy part was over. T3 might have been slightly annoyed with him, but dealing with the droid was going to be a whole lot easier than getting the snoring giant beside him up and moving.
Wake up, he said,
reaching across the heater to shake Candorus out of his slumber.
We need to talk.
Candorus grumbled something profane in Mandoa at him and rolled over onto his other side.
It's important, Revan said, shaking him even harder. You have to get Vila to move the camp.
What? What about Vila?
Candorus mumbled, opening one eye.
You have to get her to move the camp.
The eye closed again.
That's her call, not mine. She's a clan chief.
I think they're looking for Mandalore's mask in the wrong place.
Both eyes snapped open, and Candorus levered himself up to a sitting position.
Well, why didn't you say so?
Everybody's here,
Vila declared.
Say what you have to say.
Revan's head was still pounding from the Kriegi, and in the close quarters of the supply shed, her voice was loud enough to make him wince. Including Candorus and Revan, a total of 8 had gathered for the impromptu council. Vila had called them together at Candorus's insistence. 3 men and 2 women. Edric was there, and Revan recognized most of the others from the night before, though he couldn't recall their names.
We have to move the camp,
Candorus told them. As when they first arrived, Revan and Candorus had decided to let Candorus do most of the talking. It would be easier to convince the Mandalorians if they heard the idea from one of their own, provided Vila was willing to listen to anything her husband had to say.
Move the camp?
She asked incredulously.
You think it's so easy to just pick up and go? It took our scouts weeks to find this location,
one of the other women chimed in.
This is a good spot,
Edric agreed.
We're sheltered from the worst of the wind and snow. The mountain protects us from getting flanked, and the only way in is right past our sentries.
Give me one good reason we should move,
Vila demanded.
Because we'll never find Mandalore's mask if we stay here,
Candorus answered. There was a long moment of silence, his words hanging in the air.
Nobody knows where Revan hid the mask,
Vila said quietly.
The clans have each staked out their territory, hoping it's in their destiny to find that which we all seek.
Seems like a poor way to choose a leader,
Revan offered. Vila glared at him, but it was one of the other women who replied.
Fate will make the choice for us. Whichever clan is destined to find the mask will.
Is that how all the clans ended up here on Rekiad?
Revan countered.
Fate? Chance? Blind luck?
You show your ignorance when you speak of things you don't understand,
Vila said.
Fate and destiny are not the same as luck. It was not chance that brought us here. It was persistence, perseverance. We are here because we are strong.
She paused a moment, then continued a little more calmly.
When Revan hid Mandalore's mask, most of our people scattered in disgrace. But some of us refused to give up. We stayed behind to look for what was lost instead of running off to become mercenaries and hired thugs.
As she spoke, her eyes flicked toward Candorus. Revan followed her gaze to see his friend staring at the floor in shame.
For years we have kept up our search,
she continued.
We know Revan disappeared for 3 days after the massacre at Malachor 5. There are only a handful of stable hyperspace lanes in that sector. Only a few dozen habitable planets he would have been able to journey to in that time. So we've been searching each world in turn, scouring the surface meter by meter. On the first world there were less than 50 of us. It took us 2 years to explore the entire planet. But with each world our numbers grew. More clans joined in the search, and each clan's numbers increased. Our quest gave us purpose. It united us as a people once more.
She looked back at Candorus.
Slowly, those who turned their backs on the Mandalorian ways have come trickling back. Now we number in the thousands. Over 100 clans have gathered on Rekiad. If we fail to find the mask here, we'll move on to the next world, and our numbers will continue to grow, Eventually, we will find what we seek. And when one of our own finally reclaims Mandalore's mask, our numbers will be legion. On that day, the new Mandalore will call upon the armies of our people, and we will answer.
She turned and glared at Revan once more.
That is what we mean when we speak of fate,
she concluded.
We will find what we seek. It is inevitable. It is the destiny of our people.
The end of her speech was marked by a solemn silence. Looking around the room, Revan could see the power her words had on the other Mandalorians. Even Candorus had been moved. I can help you achieve your destiny, Revan promised. I know where Revan hid the mask. Listen to me, and I will help you find it.
Impossible,
Vila said with a shake of her head.
Nobody knows where he hid Mandalore's mask.
I have access to resources you don't, Revan insisted, choosing his words carefully. Republic records, military transcripts, battle plans, flight paths and navigation charts. You say you aren't even sure if the mask is on Rek yet, but I am. The mask is here, on this world. And with my help, Clan Ordo will be the ones who find it. Vila didn't say anything at first. Instead, she turned and fixed her gaze on Candorus.
Avner is your friend,
she said, her words almost an accusation.
Can we trust him?
I wouldn't have told him of our search if I didn't trust him with my life,
Candorus answered without hesitation.
And I wouldn't have brought him if I didn't believe he could help us.
All eyes focused on Vila as she considered all she had heard.
Where do you suggest we move our camp to?
She finally asked.
About 50 kilometers from here, two columns of ice rise straight up, towering several kilometers above Rekiad's surface.
The twin spears?
Edric blurted out excitedly.
Are you saying the mask is there?
There's an entrance to a tunnel in the plateau on top of one of the pillars. The tunnel leads deep into the heart of the ice. I believe that is where Revan hid Mandalore's mask.
The twin spears are in the Clan Gendry's territory,
Vila warned.
If they catch us moving in on their turf, there will be blood.
Did you really expect to find the mask without having to fight for it?
Candorus asked. Vila shook her head. Then she turned her attention to the rest of her advisors, scanning their faces, reading their emotions.
Pack up the camp,
she shouted at last, thrusting her fist into the air.
We're marching on the Twin Spears!
Revan was amazed by the efficiency of the Mandalorians. Vila's order spread quickly through the camp, prompting everyone into a flurry of activity. Each individual had a specific job, which they carried out with military precision. Some took down the tents, wrapping them into tightly rolled bundles and packing them away into footlockers along with small personal items. Others emptied the supply hut, loading the crates of food, generators, heaters, and fuel onto the heavy cargo sleds. Within an hour, they were underway, all trace of their old camp left behind, as 3 dozen men and women headed out in a long, well-spaced column. A team of 6, led by Edric, scouted up ahead to find the best path and to make sure the way was clear. Another 6 fell farther back to guard the column's flank. The rest marched in pairs between the 2 patrols. While one pulled the cargo sled, the other marched alongside with weapons drawn, wary for an ambush. Every hour the partners would switch positions. In the middle of the column, the 6 basilisk war droids trudged along, each towing a massive cargo sled loaded with hundreds of kilos of gear. To Revan, they looked like 5-meter-tall, 2-legged dragons. They walked with heavy, lumbering strides, their wings folded beneath their long, metallic bodies. High-powered laser cannons were mounted on their flexible armored necks, allowing the droids to fire in all directions. Each was controlled by a single pilot seated atop the curved spine. Not surprisingly, Vila was one of the pilots.
Commanding a basilisk war droid was an honor reserved for only the most revered warriors of the clan. Revan couldn't help but notice Candorus casting wistful glances at the great metal beasts, recalling his own days of glory now that he was forced to walk beside them. Vela set a grueling pace, which offered plenty of distraction from both idle thoughts and the biting cold. When they stopped for a one-hour break at midday, Revan felt as if he might collapse into the nearest snowbank. All he wanted to do was eat his food and rest up for the next leg of the journey. But that was not to be. Like the night before, a steady stream of visitors came by to speak with Candorus. The older members of Clan Ordo came to recount stories of past adventures they had shared with him. Some of the younger ones, who had been raised on tales of his exploits, came to see the living legend with their own eyes. Even as an outsider, it was obvious to Revan that his friend had been fully accepted back into the clan. But there was more to it than the joy of a prodigal son's return. The Mandalorians were energized, excited. Gossip had spread through the camp, and everyone seemed to know that Mandalore's mask might soon be in their grasp. And though Vela had technically been the one to give the order to move out, everyone also seemed to understand that Candorus's arrival had been the true catalyst for this call to action. The break ended far too soon for Revan's liking, but by calling on the Force to revitalize his tired limbs, he managed to stand up and get his feet moving when they set out again. Darkness came well before they reached their destination. Edric and his scouts had discovered a small valley carved into the ice where they could take shelter for the night, and Vela called a halt to their march. The camp was set up as quickly and proficiently as it had been struck earlier that morning, and Revan soon found himself in a tent with Candorus, curled up in his sleeping bag on the verge of dozing off. He estimated that they had covered 30 kilometers on their trek. The realization that they had gone well over half the distance already came as a welcome relief, allowing him to drift off into much-needed sleep. There were no dreams to plague him that night, though he did wake up once he heard someone fumbling at the entrance to the tent. "Someone's outside," he whispered to Candorus, before realizing he was alone in the tent. A few seconds later, the exterior flap was pulled aside, letting in a blast of cold air. Candorus followed in its wake. He sealed the flap, quietly crept back over to his sleeping bag, and wrapped himself inside. "Where have you been?" Revan whispered.
"Sorry. Tried not to wake you," Candorus replied.
"You didn't answer my question."
"Vela and I had some catching up to do," the big man said, and even in the darkness, Revan could tell he was grinning from ear to ear. They didn't speak again, but Revan couldn't help noticing the irony. When he'd left his wife behind to come here, he'd never imagined that Candorus would be reuniting with his own. He didn't begrudge Candorus his happiness, but it made him miss Bastila all the more.
They broke camp early the next morning, and by the time they stopped for lunch, they could clearly see the distant outline of the twin spears through Rekiad's perpetual ice fog and swirling snow.
"We're well inside Clan Gendry's territory,"
Vela said, coming over to sit beside Revan and Candorus as they tore into their rations.
"Gotta stay sharp."
"Do you think they know we're here?" Revan asked.
"Hard to say. If they're anywhere near the Twin Spears, the scouts would have seen us by now. But it's a big territory. They could be 100 kilometers away in any direction."
"Maybe we'll get lucky and they'll never know we're here," Revan said optimistically. Vela glanced over at Candorus and shook her head.
"We Mandalorians have a saying," Candorus explained. "A warrior who doesn't hope for battle has no hope during battle."
"That's a good one," Revan admitted. "But here's one I like. You can't lose a battle you never fight."
"You can't win it either,"
Vela said. They finished their food in silence. Once they were done, the group set out again. 2 hours later, they reached their final destination. a small, low-lying patch of ground nestled between the spears.
Sleep well,
Vila announced to her followers as they set up camp.
Tomorrow, Clan Ordo will claim its destiny.
The attack came just before dawn. Subconsciously, Revan felt the danger through the Force, causing his eyes to snap open a split second before the sentries sounded the alarm. He was alone in his tent again. Obviously, Candorus had decided to spend another night with Vila. Knowing his friend would meet him on the battlefield, Revan kicked free of his sleeping bag and struggled quickly into his layers of clothing. Remembering his promise to Candorus, he tucked his lightsaber out of sight beneath his belt, arming himself instead with the twin blasters he had been carrying since they'd left the Ebon Hawk. The sounds of battle could already be heard outside, and Revan charged from the tent to join the fray. All around him he saw the men and women of Clan Ordo, most clad only in underclothes and a few scraps of plated armor, battling the forces of Clan Gendry that were swarming in from all sides. Clan Gendry outnumbered Clan Ordo by almost 2-1, though Revan noticed they had only 4 basilisks. The basilisks swooped back and forth above the battle, raining blaster fire down from the sky. Immediately, Revan recognized the Gendry strategy. They had concentrated their attack near the Ordo basilisks, hoping to keep Vila and her fellow pilots from reaching the deadly machines. Revan opened fire with his blasters, drawing on the Force to augment his accuracy. His first volley dropped an enemy soldier charging toward him. His second took out a sniper half-hidden on a ridge over 20 meters away. But he knew the battle wouldn't be won by blasters alone. He sprinted across the center of the camp, heading toward the rear where the Ordo basilisks were parked. Enemy blaster fire poured down, forcing him to duck, dodge, and weave. But none of the bolts found a mark. Candorus and Vila had managed to get there ahead of him. Basilisk fire had them pinned down behind an outcropping of jagged, snow-tipped rocks, along with the rest of the Ordo Basilisk pilots. Revan skidded to a stop, dropping to his knees and sliding the last few meters across the icy surface to join them. Candorus flashed him a fierce grin. Moving in unison, Candorus and Vila popped up from behind the rocks to fire at the enemy war droids. The blaster fire ricocheted harmlessly off the armor plating, and they were forced to duck again when the Basilisk's rider veered in around to return fire.
Welcome to the party,
Candorus shouted to Revan.
Got any bright ideas?
Have you tried shooting the pilots? Revan asked.
Easier said than done,
Vila answered. It was true. The Mandalorians riding on the back of the war droids were held in place by heavily armored saddles that protected most of their bodies. A few key spots near their heads and shoulders were vulnerable, but hitting a moving target that size would require a small miracle, even for Revan.
All we need is to buy a few seconds,
Vila said.
Just enough time for us to get into our basilisks and fire them up.
Revan nudged Candorus with his elbow, drawing the big man's attention as he dropped the blaster from his hand and moved his open palm to cover the lightsaber hilt under his belt.
Candorus responded with a faint nod. I can create a distraction, Revan said, but you'll have to move fast.
Whatever you're thinking, do it, Vila said. If we don't get to our basilisks, we don't stand a chance.
Discarding one of his blasters, Revan leapt over the rock, drawing and igniting his lightsaber in a single motion. The glowing green blade instantly drew the attention of all 4 Gendry basilisks as the pilots swung their beasts around to target the hated Jedi who had suddenly appeared in their midst. Revan had fought plenty of basilisks during his campaign against the Mandalorians. The trick was to keep moving and getting close enough to limit the effectiveness of their blaster cannons. Though capable of achieving high speeds during a bombing run or charging enemy lines, the droids were slowed down by their heavy armor whenever they tried to turn or change course. He charged the nearest rider, zigzagging to keep the basilisk from getting a clear shot. Running directly beneath the belly of the low-flying beast, he leapt high in the air to slash his lightsaber across the droid's tail. The energy blade ricocheted off the armor's plating, but not before slicing through one of the stabilizing fins at the tip. The pilot tried to pull his basilisk into a steep climb so he could loop around and come diving back down at Revan, a difficult maneuver even without a missing stabilizer fin.
The damaged droid tried to respond to his command, but it veered wildly out of control, turning on its side and nearly dumping the rider to the ground. Revan took the opportunity to leap on the Basilisk's back, grabbing hold of the back of the pilot's seat. The Mandalorian reached back over his shoulder to grab at the stowaway, but Revan easily avoided his grasp as he slid his lightsaber tip through the back of the seat and through the pilot's torso. The Basilisk screamed as the semi-sentient droid felt the death of its rider through the symbiotic link the Mandalorian shared with their mechanical mounts. Left without guidance or direction, the simple artificial intelligence programs reverted to a primal attempt to rid the Basilisk of its new rider. The thrashing sent the Basilisk into a deadly dive. Revan leapt clear just before it hit the ground. His fall cushioned by the snow, he rolled, sprang back to his feet, and turned his attention to the three remaining Basilisks. He wasn't surprised to see them circling high above him, well out of the reach of even a Jedi's leap. Just as he had learned how to fight Basilisks during the Mandalorian Wars, their riders had also learned the best strategies to use when facing a member of the Jedi Order. If they stayed at a distance and coordinated their fire, it was only a matter of time until they brought Revan down. Fortunately, he wasn't fighting alone. His distraction had given Vela and the other Clan Ordo riders the time they needed. As the Gendry pilots prepared to retaliate against Revan, six Ordo Basilisks took to the air in attack formation. Now outnumbered 2-1, the Gendry pilots banked their war droids away from the enemy squadron and fled. Instead of pursuing, the Ordo riders turned their attention to the enemy forces on the ground. The battle quickly turned into a rout. Even with superior numbers, the Gendry troops couldn't match the awesome firepower of half a dozen Basilisks. The carnage lasted less than 5 minutes before the Gendry ranks broke. Revan didn't bother to participate in the final stages of the slaughter. He'd known the battle was over the instant Vela and the others took to the sky. He looked around for Candorus and found him perched atop one of the Basilisks, screaming out a Mandalorian war cry as he arced back and forth across the field, butchering his enemies. Such vicious savagery was typical of Mandalorian warfare, and yet Revan knew that once the battle was over, Clan Gendry would hold no grudge against the victors. If Mandalore ever rose again and called them to fight alongside Clan Ordo, they would answer without hesitation. His thoughts were interrupted when a great shadow passed over him, followed a second later by the heavy thud as Candorus brought his Basilisk in for a landing a few meters away.
"Better put that thing away,"
he said, leaping to the ground and nodding at Revan's lightsaber. "Why? You think Vela's gonna forget I have it?" Revan asked. But he extinguished the blade as he spoke.
"I doubt anyone other than the pilot saw what happened. No point advertising what you really are more than we have to."
Revan changed the subject. "You think they'll try another attack?"
"No,"
Candorus said. "You sure? I get the feeling they don't like us being in their territory."
"They fled the battle," Candorus grinned. "It's our territory now."
His grin grew wider.
"Felt good to fly into battle again."
"Where'd you get the mount?" Revan asked.
"Belongs to a young man named Grizzer. He still hasn't been tested in battle, so Vela told me I could use it if we ran into any trouble."
"When'd she tell you that?"
"The other night."
"You mean when you were sharing her tent?" Candorus shrugged. "What does Grizzer think about that?"
"Vela's the clan leader. He'll do what she says."
"And what's she going to say now that she knows I'm a Jedi?" Revan wondered.
"Guess we're gonna find out,"
Candorus said, as Vela's Basilisk swooped in to land beside them. The Clan Ordo leader didn't say a word as she climbed down from her seat. She walked toward the two men, her expression unreadable.
"Go help with the wounded," she said to Revan. "You Jedi are good at that, right?"
He nodded.
"After that, get some rest. Both of you. Be ready to leave at daybreak."
Her words were calm, almost casual,
but there was a fierce intensity in her eyes that made Revan wonder if he'd made an enormous mistake.
Chapter 12.
I wasn't told to expect you back yet, Lord Scourge,
the guard at the gate said.
Maybe Darth Nihiris didn't think you needed to know my schedule,
Scourge replied, his tone dripping with acid. The guard nodded and buzzed Scourge in. Scourge moved quickly down the stronghold's halls, hoping his rebuke had shocked the guard into not reporting his arrival. The truth was, Nihiris didn't know he was back yet. He had been expected to contact her immediately after the mission to kill Darth Zedrix was over, but he'd stayed silent, hastening his return journey to Dromund Kos so he could question Setchel before anyone else knew he had touched down on the planet. He'd arrived late at night, and if he was lucky, he'd catch Setchel asleep in his room. In the servants' wing, he paused at the large wooden door and tested the handle, expecting it to be locked. To his surprise, it turned silently in his hand. Was Setchel expecting someone? Or was he merely so confident in his position as Nihiris's favorite that he believed himself safe? Scourge entered the room, silently locking the door behind him, then crept through the darkness to the bed where Setchel lay sleeping beneath the covers. Reaching out, he placed his gloved hand firmly over Setchel's mouth. Setchel woke with a start, thrashing and loosing muffled cries into Scourge's palm. The Sith Lord pressed down harder and leaned in close.
"Cry out for help and you're dead," he whispered in Setchel's ear. "Do you understand?"
Feeling the advisor nod, Scourge slowly drew his hand away.
"Lord Scourge," Setchel asked softly. "Is that you? It's hard to see in the dark."
"No light,"
Scourge warned, knowing someone might see the glow from beneath the door and decide to investigate.
"I trust your mission went well,"
Setchel said. Scourge couldn't see the expression on the advisor's face, but he detected the faintest tremor in his voice.
"You're going to answer my questions," Scourge said.
"Of course, my lord,"
Setchel replied, reverting to the fawning, ingratiating tone he'd adopted at their first meeting.
"Meekness will not save you tonight," Scourge said. "The truth is your only hope of surviving this interrogation."
He pulled a short, sharp blade from his belt and pressed it against Setchel's cheek.
"My first question is a simple one. Has Nihiris been using me?"
"My lord, why would you think..."
Scourge jammed his hand over Setchel's mouth, cutting off his words. Then he drew the edge of his blade slowly along the base of one of the fleshy tendrils dangling from Setchel's cheek. The smaller man screamed in agony, but his cries were swallowed up in Scourge's glove. Scourge kept a steady pressure on the blade so that the fine edge sliced cleanly through the tendril, severing it. Blood began to weep from the wound. Scourge waited until Setchel's spasms had stopped before he pulled his hand away. To his credit, Setchel was smart enough to limit further reaction to a soft whimper.
"When I ask a question, I want a direct and immediate answer," Scourge said. "So I will ask again. Is Nihiris using me?"
"Of course she is," Setchel mumbled. "She uses everybody."
"Was Darth Zedrix really working with the human separatists?"
"Yes."
Scourge analyzed the response, focusing on the tone, pitch, and inflection. Setchel was speaking the truth.
"Did Zedrix actually try to kill Nihiris?"
When Setchel hesitated, Scourge responded by slamming his hand over his mouth again. Ignoring the muffled pleas, he lowered his blade to the advisor's face and severed another tendril.
"Next time, I take an eye,"
he said once Setchel had recovered from the pain.
Remember, direct and immediate answers.
Lying took thought and effort. It took time. Forcing a subject to answer quickly was a simple but effective tool. He removed his hand again, ready to slash Setchel's throat if he cried out for help. Again, the advisor had the survival instinct to hold his tongue.
Again, did Zedrix actually try to kill Nyriss?
No.
The answer was spoken sullenly and resentfully, but Scourge could sense the truth behind the attitude.
Who hired the assassins?
Nyriss did. She wanted to draw suspicion away from herself.
Suspicion? Suspicion of what?
Ask her yourself!
Setchel spat. Scourge sighed and clamped his hand over Setchel's mouth yet again. But before he could bring the blade to bear, the door swung open with such force it nearly broke free from its hinges. Darth Nyriss stood on the other side, framed by the light of the hallway's glow lamps.
I will answer all your questions, she said calmly. But if you harm Setchel again, I will end you.
Scourge tossed the knife aside and slowly stood up from the bed. His heart was pounding, and he had to fight against the urge to go for his lightsaber. He'd known there were risks in coming after Setchel. Now all he could do was hope his actions hadn't cost him his life.
I assume this conversation will be in private, he asked.
She nodded and turned away. Scourge didn't even look back at Setchel as he followed Nyriss out into the hall. Darth Nyriss was silent until they reached her private chamber. Scourge was surprised to find that her Twi'lek slave was not present. It seemed that whatever was about to be said could not be trusted even to the Twi'lek's faithful ears.
Are you loyal to the Empire?
Nyriss asked him.
I thought I would get to ask the questions, Scourge replied.
Remember your place, she warned. Listen to what I have to say. When I am finished, you will have your chance to speak.
I am loyal to the Emperor, Scourge declared.
Loyal to the Emperor or to the Empire?
She pressed.
They are two different things.
What do you mean?
The Emperor is mad. Unchecked, he will destroy us all.
For 1,000 years, the Empire has thrived under his rule,
Scourge countered. Her words were treason, but there was little he could do about it. If he tried to strike her down, he was fairly sure he would not be able to stand against her. Unlike Darth Zedrix, she was a Sith Council member in the prime of her powers. Now that she had told him her true feelings, she couldn't let him leave her room alive. Not if she felt he would report her to the Emperor. His only option, his only hope for survival, was to play along.
The Emperor has expanded our borders, Nyriss admitted. He has made us stronger, but he is only doing this for one purpose. He is planning an attack on the Republic. He intends to start another war with the Jedi.
No, Scourge said, shaking his head. Impossible.
The Great Hyperspace War had been one of the darkest times in the history of the Sith. Under the leadership of Naga Sadao, they had invaded the newly discovered Republic, seeking to conquer it as they had conquered every other civilization they had encountered. But despite their early victories, they had quickly lost ground. The Republic hadn't just defeated the Sith fleets, they had annihilated them. And then the Jedi had pursued the fleeing survivors across the galaxy, nearly hunting the Sith to extinction. The decisive actions of the Emperor had saved them. He had led the remaining Sith into the unexplored regions of the galaxy, a decades-long flight that ended only when they rediscovered and reclaimed Dromund Kaas, their long-lost ancestral home. Fortunately, the Republic and the Jedi had never found them here, a small stroke of luck that had allowed the Empire to survive. Over the next centuries, the Sith slowly rebuilt what they had lost. They began to expand their empire again.
They conquered newly discovered worlds and sectors on the far fringes of the galaxy, far beyond the borders of Republic-explored space, safely hidden from the ever-vigilant Jedi Order. Every Sith knew the story. It was taught to them at an early age. And while the official stance was that the Empire was slowly gathering its strength to one day strike back at their enemies, the truth was far different. Scourge and Nyriss both understood the folly of that path. They understood that the Empire could survive only as long as the Jedi remained unaware that the Sith still lived. If the Emperor was really planning to attack the Republic again, he would be repeating the mistakes of Naga Sadao. He would start a war they couldn't possibly win. And this time, the Jedi would not stop until they had wiped the Sith out completely.
"You're lying," Scourge insisted. "Attacking the Republic makes no sense. The Emperor is not a fool."
"No," Nyriss admitted. "He is no fool. He is arrogant. He is powerful. And he is mad."
She looked directly at Scourge.
"Some of us on the Dark Council learned of his plan. To save the Empire, to save our entire species, we formed an alliance, vowing to work together to bring the Emperor down."
"Was Darth Zedrix part of this alliance?"
"He was."
"Yet you betrayed him."
"He became a necessary sacrifice for the cause."
"If he was your ally, why did he have to die?"
"If the Emperor suspected the members of the Dark Council of allying against him, he would kill us all. We had to take steps to protect ourselves. To throw off suspicion, we had to distance ourselves from the separatists who openly opposed the Emperor."
"That's why you staged the fake assassinations against yourself," Scourge said. "If the separatists were targeting you, the Emperor would be less likely to suspect you were working with them."
Nyriss nodded.
"The plan was to have my own people investigate the attempts on my life, and place the blame accordingly. But then the Emperor sent you, and the plan had to change. Your arrival meant the Emperor suspected this was bigger than a simple separatist uprising. It wouldn't be enough to implicate a radical fringe group of terrorists."
"So you framed Zedrix."
"You can't frame someone who is guilty," Nyriss corrected. "I just exposed him. Zedrix really was working with the separatists. Every piece of evidence you uncovered on your missions was real. It had to be. I could not afford to be caught in a lie if you or the Emperor looked deeper into the matter. Allowing Zedrix to take the blame will confirm the Emperor's suspicions that the separatists were working with someone on the Dark Council. His death will keep my involvement and that of my co-conspirators secret."
"And you get to eliminate a long-time rival," Scourge added.
"A fortuitous bonus," Nyriss agreed,
her face breaking into one of her hideous grins.
"Zedrix will not be missed," she added. "He was a weak link in our chain. He was human, and his power was fading. If one of us had to be sacrificed, he was the most logical choice."
"Why tell all this to me?" Scourge asked.
"You already suspected something was wrong," Nyriss told him. "Why else would you have tried to interrogate Setchel? If I simply kill you, though, it might raise the Emperor's suspicions even farther. He sent you to investigate the assassinations. It would be better if you were the one to tell him Darth Zedrix was responsible."
She paused for a long moment before continuing.
"During your service, you have proven your worth to me. You are strong in the Force, intelligent, perceptive. You have incredible potential. My hope is that by revealing the truth, I can convince you to join our cause. I would hate to discard such a valuable tool without good reason."
Scourge narrowed his eyes. This was too easy. Even if he swore allegiance to Nyriss, she couldn't just let him walk out of the room. The risk that he might report her to the Emperor was too great. She had to have some other way to protect herself, some angle he hadn't considered. He realized he was in over his depth. Ever since he had come to work for Nyriss, she had been playing him. She'd twisted and manipulated him for her own purposes, and he had danced for her like a puppet on a string.
"What's the catch?" he finally asked. "How do you know I won't betray your confidence?"
"Very good,"
she said, smiling fiendishly in approval.
"I would have been disappointed if you had simply accepted my offer. Short of killing you, there is no way I can completely eliminate the risk that you will try to expose me. But what proof do you have? Accuse me, and I will simply claim that you are the real traitor, trying to frame me after you killed Darth Zedrix. Remember, whatever actual evidence exists will implicate you, not me. He died by your blade. Are you certain you left no evidence behind that could implicate you in his murder? No drops of blood? No flecks of skin? No witnesses who can place you at the spaceport on Bastyrda the day Zedrix died?"
Scourge nodded in appreciation. He couldn't help but admire how thoroughly Nyriss had entangled him in her web.
"Let me guess. The files that you recovered from the UDM manufacturing plant and the Separatist base will implicate me as well."
"Setchel is very good at what he does. Even the experts can't tell when he's doctored the data file,"
she assured him.
"Even with all the evidence pointing in your direction, it's possible the Emperor would still believe you over a member of the Dark Council. But honestly, he would probably kill us both just to be safe. That way the traitor is dead no matter which one of us is guilty. And I don't think you're the type to martyr yourself out of loyalty to the Emperor."
"So where do we go from here?" Scourge asked.
"Now I must persuade you to truly believe in our cause," Nyriss said. "It's not enough to secure your silence through threats and blackmail. When we finally move against the Emperor, I want you on our side."
"And how do you intend to convince me?"
"Have you ever heard tales of the Emperor's childhood?"
Scourge shook his head.
"I don't even know what planet he's from."
"Few people do. He's hidden his past, because if the truth came to light, none would follow him."
Scourge was interested despite himself.
"He was born almost 1,000 years ago,"
she went on.
"In the decades before the Great Hyperspace War with the Republic, he spent his childhood on Ethema, a lush and vibrant agricultural world on the far fringes of the Empire."
"Ethema? I've never heard of it."
"Once it went by another name, but that name has long been forgotten, just like the planet itself. The Emperor erased Nathema from the history books and the astrogation charts to hide all evidence of his crimes."
"Crimes?"
"Through the lost rituals of the ancients, he used the dark side to conquer death and make himself immortal. But his immortality came with a cost. Telling you what happened is not enough. You must see for yourself. Only then will you understand the price the Emperor was willing to pay. Only then will you understand why he must be stopped."
"And how am I to find this lost world?"
"I will take you there," Nyriss said. "Then you can witness the horror with your own eyes."
"How do I know this isn't a trap?" Scourge demanded. "Another elaborate trick to manipulate me into doing your bidding."
"You don't," Nyriss admitted. "But what other choice do you have?"
She had a point.
When do we leave? He asked.
Patience, Lord Scourge, Nyriss said. It will take several days before we are ready to leave. The journey is long, and we must be certain the Emperor never finds out. Traveling to Nethima is punishable by death.
Will Sechel be joining us?
No. This is for your eyes alone.
Scourge nodded, silently wondering if the advisor would try to seek revenge for the brutal interrogation.
You are part of the Inner Circle now,
Nyriss assured him.
Sechel will not dare to harm you.
See to your injuries,
she instructed, noting the burns left behind by Darth Zedrix's lightning attack.
Then return to your room and get some rest.
As he turned to go, she gave him another of her unsettling smiles.
You might want to sleep with one eye open, though, just in case.
Chapter 13 Clan Ordo's victory celebrations continued late into the night. 6 members of the clan, 4 men and 2 women, had died in the battle. A quarter of the casualties they had inflicted on Clan Gendry. Vila had ordered all 30 bodies to be gathered together into a massive funeral pyre. Revan understood this mixing of friend and foe. They were all Mandalorians who had died in battle. By custom, they were all to a warrior's funeral, regardless of which clan they had been fighting for. The pyre burned for hours, the flames lighting the night and warming the camp as the brothers and sisters of the fallen recounted tales of their bravery. They honored their memories through song and feast, simultaneously grieving their deaths and celebrating the resounding Ordo victory. The ale flowed freely, but Revan had limited himself to a single mug. Because he had fought with Clan Ordo, he was entitled to join the revelry. But though he knew their customs, he wasn't Mandalorian. It was difficult for him to rejoice in the loss of comrades, no matter how honorable their deaths may have been. Revan was also wary of what Vila might do now that she knew he was a Jedi. Hopefully, she just thought he was an anonymous rogue master. If she knew who he really was, there could be trouble. Many Mandalorians despised the Jedi, and Revan in particular. Revan had been responsible for countless Mandalorian deaths, and he had stolen and hidden Mandalore's mask, an act some considered a war crime. Considering Vila's fierce pride in her people and her culture, she probably wouldn't simply forgive and forget. Fortunately, it seemed like she wasn't aware of his true identity. Over the course of the evening, Edric and several others came over to speak with him, making a point to include him in the clan festivities. Everyone seemed to know he had drawn the fire of the enemy basilisks, allowing the pilots to reach their mounts. Interestingly, though, none of them knew any of the details of what had occurred out beyond the edges of the main battle. Obviously, Vila had sworn the other pilots to secrecy. He should have taken that as a good sign, but he kept catching glimpses of Vila and the other pilots watching him suspiciously. They might not know he was Revan, but they knew he was a Jedi, and that clearly bothered them. He wasn't sure if Vila had ordered them to stay silent out of respect for what he had done during the battle, or because she thought they still needed him to find Mandalore's mask, or even because of her feelings for Candorous. But whatever the explanation, his secret seemed safe. For now. When he finally climbed into bed late that night, he was surprised to hear Candorous come stumbling into the tent a few minutes later.
I thought you'd be with Vila.
She's not too happy with me right now,
Candorous explained.
I'll let her cool down for the night.
Sorry about that.
You did what you had to,
his friend answered as he settled into his sleeping bag.
Sooner or later it was going to come out anyway.
How bad is this?
Vila doesn't like Jedi, Candorous admitted. But she's hard to read. Hopefully she'll just hold a grudge for a few days.
The big man rolled over onto his side.
Either that, or she'll try to kill us on tomorrow's climb.
Revan couldn't tell if he was joking.